This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The village of Lincoln Heights once thrived as black migrants from the American South resettled in the area. The prosperity of the community began to decline, however, from the 1970s to today. But an active group of residents wants to revive Lincoln Heights. And here to talk about the Heights Movement, our village council member and Heights Movement co-founder, Durance Daniels. Welcome, Durance.
How you doing? Thank you.
The Heights Movement member, Carlton Collins. Welcome, Carlton.
Hi, thank you.
And we also have with us today WCPO reporter Lucy May, who recently did a long profile on these gentlemen and their efforts. Lucy, thanks for coming back in.
Thanks so much for having me.
Questions, comments from our listeners, call us 513-419-7100. You can email your questions or comments to talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. So, Durance and Carlton, you both grew up in Lincoln Heights around the same time. You're about the same age?
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
yes,
cool. Okay, so before we get into what you're doing right now, you don't look old enough to remember when Lincoln Heights was the prosperous community that it used to be. So talk about your childhood and what the experience was like growing up in Lincoln Heights. We'll start with you, Durance.
Yeah, so my childhood in the area, so technically, I grew up in a neighborhood like just right next to it, some Woodlawn. So it's a street throws away. But my father and my grandfather are all lifelong residents of Lincoln Heights. So me growing up in the area, you would always have a lot of friends during that time. Once again, you got to think about the time period. It's early 2000s, late 90s. So you're having the aftermath of the crack epidemic. So a lot of my friends' fathers weren't in the home and things of that nature. And I don't quite understand at the time why there might be a disconnect in some of the you know, the choices that some of my friends had been making at the time. Now, as you get older, you realize that the stability of a family or stability of where, you know, certain aspects are that I had, they may not have had at the time. So now that puts us in a situation where how do you start rebuilding and rehealing some of those fractures that happened during that time? So me growing up and my experience was one of a big family-oriented lifestyle where we always talked about the history of Lincoln Heights, the history of how we got to where we are now. And when some of those things have fallen apart, how can we continue to build the structure and the stability within our family to make sure we can pass that down on to other families and other, not just communities, but other families that look like us and other friends that we might have. So that's kind of how my background led into where we are now in this aspect. But yeah, just growing up in Lincoln Heights during the late 90s, the early 2000s, it was a rough time of just seeing a lot of drug activity, a lot of gun violence activity. You would come to school and people talking about, hey, I just literally saw it's funny that you laugh about it now, but literally folks talking about, I literally just saw a dead body like coming to school. This is like 2002. I remember hearing, I could tell you the guy who was having this conversation and where they were at on the street. But when dealing with that, when you're 13, 14, 15, 16, you're thinking that's just the way of life and that's not how it's supposed to be. And trying to now make sure that we change the culture and the mindset of people that that's not what our community is supposed to be. Just because we dealt with some fractures, we can still move on and still prosper through. So.
And Carlton Collins is here with us as well. Do you remember that kind of story of people sort of laughing off something as tragic as knowing that someone was found dead nearby?
I mean, I wouldn't say they were laughing it off.
Well, I guess I'm just trying to set the scene of what, you know.
It's normalized.
It's normalized.
Yeah, and I mean, I think to answer the question specifically, I see it as when I think about that time growing up, I think about a lot of the people who poured into us. I think about a lot of what was there. And I think there was a period of time that we had where there's essentially things that were occurring in the community, some of them negative, some of them caused by, you know, youth fighting or whatever the case was. But some of it was there was like infrastructure that was not being supported, right? And, you know, we were 13, 14. Mm-hmm. I think I might have been 12. He might have been 14 because, you know, he graduated with my brother. When the Rex, when the YMCA closed down, right? So we remember being in the community. We remember our friends who that was their only safe space, right? And you strip that away from them and we watch them fall off the tracks, Like, we watch just them getting into more trouble and then committing crimes. And part of it was that it wasn't that they were necessarily bad kids. Yeah. It was the fact that they didn't have anything else to do. They didn't have anywhere else to go, and they didn't have anybody pouring into them.
And so now you've got this effort called the Heights Movement. And, mm-hmm. and is that memory, that experience of seeing your peers lose out on that safe space that had been available to them in their immediate world of chaos, was that part of the motivation here?
Absolutely. 100%. I mean, we were fortunate, right? Like, the five of us, you know.
Yeah, we should note there are five of you that are part of this right now.
You know, Durant's had the opportunity to go play football at Elon. I had the opportunity to go to Morehouse and get my education there. Woodard, Brandon Woodard, he had the opportunity to run track at Ohio State. Like, we had a great opportunity to get out. Keith Mitchell had the opportunity to go to OU and then Court.
Miami.
Yeah, in Miami. So, like, we were able to get out, kind of see the world, and then come back and get a better understanding of some of the things that we didn't get, but also some of the great things that we did receive, right? Yeah. And just making sure that now that the community, and most importantly, like, having seen a generation of our peers, youth, like, miss out, we just saw it was like, it's our responsibility to make sure we're there and we're pouring in.
We were at a unique spot, like as Carlton was saying, is during that transition period of when the YMCA closed down and when the community center closed down. So when you look into the community right now, because I was just leaving actually North College Hill Recreation Center, and just looking how that space, you have a place where people can come, talk, share ideas, share what's good in the community, share what's bad in the community. When you take that out of the community, it now, first of all, it causes a divide. And when you, just like anything else, you could divide and conquer, and you almost create a virus within itself when that community center goes away. So when Carlton and I, as he said before, when the community center went down, you can see some of our friends start to make bad decisions and bad choices and start to wonder where that disconnect is. So we saw it as a big opportunity to, if it's not a community center that we can build this year, at least build that foundation that the kids know, not even just the kid, the community knows that they can at least come to us with an idea, a problem, and hopefully that we can provide that resource to at least bring all those places together that we can start going in the right direction.
So in spite of the struggles that you saw your community experience while you were coming up, you did manage to get out, but you've come back. Yeah. And so, Carlton, you're part of what you're doing is you're running an after-school program, and Durant's here on the village council. You call this new structure, this new organization that you're working on together, the Heights Movement. So, Durant, tell me what you're moving towards.
Yeah, so what we're moving towards, the overall goal is that it's a self-empowerment of the people that allows them to now have the tools to take care of their own health, empower their own education, and to move on a more economic standpoint. So right now in Lincoln Heights, there is a disconnect on how to move on real estate or how to gain equity. Or even something as small as how to fill out a college application. Those the hub of how to get those resources right now, everybody's fending for themselves. So the movement is about bringing the community together. And I know that sounds real cliche, and I know that sounds like a bunch of rainbows, but you would be surprised if just a simple, like this article this week, it gave people hope that, okay, there is a connection, there is a fight, that people do want to come together on an aspect of it. So that's what the movement is moving towards.
And the article you referenced was produced by Lucy May from WCPO. Mm-hmm. We're going to bring you in just a moment. Let's go to the phone lines first. We have Gina on the line. Gina, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I hope you can hear me.
We sure can. I think the gentleman on the panel here identified who you were before I could say your full name. So go ahead and tell them who you are.
Oh, my name is Gina Ruffin Moore. I serve on the Princeton Board of Education, and I'm familiar with Chris, Lucy, and Durant, and everyone else, and even my brother, Eric Ruffin, who was mentioned in the article that was written. I am so happy and so proud of the initiative that's being taken by these men and everyone else involved. The Princeton City School District, of which I'm one of five school board members, we represent at least seven different communities, and Lincoln Heights is one of them. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we have a vested interest in making sure that our students have the needs and resources they need to be successful. And this initiative sounds like it's just the thing we need. And we're very happy about it. And I can't speak for the whole board, but our superintendent, Tom Burton, he can be of assistance in any way, I'm sure, depending on whatever it is, to make sure that the students get the what they need to be successful. The bottom line is a child's success is not so much determined by their environment, but it's more determined by the emphasis that their family puts on certain things, because many of the great and outstanding people in our community and even throughout the world came from places like Lincoln Heights. Mm-hmm. So it boils down to a matter of having real grit, true grit, and having a strong faith and having a desire to do well, which is why so many people have poured into us. I've never lived in Lincoln Heights. I grew up in Woodlawn, which is the next nearby community. And it has just been amazing when you look back at the people who came before us,
yes,
who laid the groundwork for the success that we can try to bring about now. Just like those gentlemen, we can live anywhere we want, my husband and I, but we choose to stay in the Princeton School District. We choose to stay in Woodlawn because we care and because we want a future for our kids.
Gina, we appreciate the call so much, and we'll let the gentleman respond to some of the words that you had to say. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And before we get into the educational component of what the board member there was saying, Gina Moore, let's talk to Lucy May from WCPO, who produced the article that certainly got our attention, and we're happy to have all of you here as well. Lucy, what did you find out about Lincoln Heights that surprised you the most as someone from the area, but not from Lincoln Heights?
Yes. Well, and I want to say that I worked on the story with my colleague, Raven Richard, who did a terrific job. She is the TV expert and worked on the broadcast story, which I thought was tremendous. I did grow up around here. I grew up in Northern Kentucky, which, you know, on the maybe the wrong side of the river. but yeah, what I was amazed by, I didn't know enough about the rich history of Lincoln Heights, just it's the founding of Lincoln Heights and kind of the glory days in the 40s and 50s, and some of the tremendous people that Lincoln Heights has produced. Nikki Giovanni, the poet, grew up in Lincoln Heights. The Isley Brothers, the musical group, grew up in Lincoln Heights. And just all of this tremendous history and how the community, it was really started as a community for African-American residents to have their own property, but it was kind of started on the cheap. Like the developers who developed this land didn't have the infrastructure that other communities had. And so the people who lived there really had to make their own way and build a community and do without a lot of the infrastructure that other communities, other cities and villages had. So, I talked to Carl Westmoreland, who grew up in Lincoln Heights, who's now a senior historian at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. And he was talking about what it was like in the 40s and 50s and just, what the community was like during that heyday. And I thought it was really important to, what some people might remember about Lincoln Heights or the headlines they see about Lincoln Heights have to do with some of the, some of the trouble because that's when we show up as the news media, when there's trouble. And that's important to understand that. But I think it's just as important, if not more so, to know that rich history and, the pride and why it's there and what there is, all those assets to build upon.
I thought it was interesting in your reporting to see some of the near misses, or I guess total misses, how close Lincoln Heights had come to opportunities for prosperity related to GE Aviation in Evendale, or related to some of the other industry in nearby Lockland. Talk about that a little bit, about how close Lincoln Heights was to sort of being like those two communities.
Yeah, Durant's really educated me about that when we sat down to talk, because when Lincoln Heights first tried to incorporate, the lines that the community leaders drew around the community included part of the company that is now GE Aviation. It was under a different name there, but it was still a big, important company. And there was a real battle against making that part of the land part of Lincoln Heights. And community leaders sued to try to make that happen. They did not prevail in court. So they went back a couple years later, redrew the lines to a smaller area, and then they got to incorporate as Lincoln Heights. So, you know, as Durant said very astutely when we were talking, just think if Lincoln Heights had had just a portion of the tax revenue that would have come from what's now GE Aviation, just think of the resources that the community would have had for all those years. I mean, Carl Westmoreland was telling me when he was growing up and we first moved back to Lincoln Heights after going to college, the city council would have to vote. They could, you know, put in 5 streetlights every year because that's all the money there was. Yeah. So,
and Durant, I mean, you're a member of the village council and you heard Lucy refer to it as city council. We had a little chat before we went on the air that it used to be a city and just by Ohio law, based on the population, you've lost population and now you're considered legally a village.
Yep.
So what are some of the financial constraints that the village faces?
So think about it right now. We're operating on about a $2.3 million budget, totally. So with that $2.3 million, at least $800,000 of that is going to pay for our Hamilton County Police Services, Sheriff's Office, that's there. So that's a big chunk of your budget. The next services that we're also paying for is our fire and police, which is about another $400,000. So right there, that's about 1.2. So you're working about $1 million. Now you still got to pay your service department. You still got to pay your administrative fee. So the money that you're working with is real squeeze at that moment. If you're, like we said before, just if you get a small percentage of what's coming from GE, that in itself might even just double our own budget. And you can think about the mass things that we can do in the community right now. And especially our main point that we want to talk about is, as we continue to move within the movement, we want it to be a people-based, a community-based movement where the people are deciding where that money should go if so happens that, you know, things were to work in a perfect world and, you know, that was to be rectified. But, yeah, it definitely makes you wonder if – just seeing how what we're working with just a bare minimum that we have right now, if we could just double that or just get at least a half of that, man, the sky's the limit, because you have the people and the talent all there in the community. You have writers, you have educators, you have professors, you have athletes. So the talent is within the community. The problem is you don't have the infrastructure for that talent to branch out and really move within the community. It always has to go somewhere else to expose that talent, and that's the issue.
From where is Lincoln Heights' tax base derived?
So a lot of it is all within the community, where what they call a bedroom tax base, where everything is just your property tax payroll.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Payrolls is just slipping my tongue. Your payrolls tax and your property tax is where we're getting a big chunk of our monies from. We have a couple levies, obviously, that have passed as well, but that's just our big chunk of our money is where we're getting from our tax base. And the issue, though, and that we're still working on, when I first got into council, there was only 33% of our population that was paying their taxes. Because a lot of people don't truly understand, and once again, it gets back to the education point, of how you have to pay your local taxes, because people are just paying their stuff on TurboTax and just doing things of that nature, and it's not getting kicked back into the village. That was an issue even I had to educate myself on, and just how tax revenue goes about. So,
and this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking to two of the five guys behind the Heights Movement, an effort to revitalize the village of Lincoln Heights. We're joined by Durant Daniels. He's also a member of the Village Council. We also have one of the movement members, Carlton Collins, with us alongside WCPO reporter Lucy May this afternoon. Call us at 513-419-7100 if you have a question or comment. Carlton, talk about a little bit about the after-school program that you're working on, because I'd like to hear about what the next generation of Lincoln Heights, I don't know, what's the demonym for someone from Lincoln Heights? Like you'd be a Cincinnatian. Is there one?
We say you're from Zone 15. No. A Lincoln Heightsian? I don't know, but yeah. But yeah.
All right,
yeah,
we'll work on that for me, I guess. So, but talk about the kids who are coming up now.
In terms of the kids now, I think, you know, one of the big things is, and I have to, first and foremost, I want to applaud Principal Dawn Bailey. She's been there. This is her 6th year, and she's just amazing in terms of the community, in terms of the kids. At one point, Lincoln Heights Elementary was down to maybe 100, 150 kids. Now it's well over 300, because the one thing that how it works within Princeton is that if you live in the district, you can attend any of the schools that are in the district in any of the other neighborhoods. So there was kind of a mass exodus of people sending their kids from Lincoln Heights to other schools, and she reversed that, right? And for us at Lincoln Heights Outreach, our big thing is we want to stand in the gap as much as humanly possible. Like, we've had a summer camp there known as Camp Hope, and then we started an after-school program. The summer camp has been operating for this next year will be our 14th year. And we wanted to put the focus on how do we make sure that kids are sound academically before they go off and they get into the middle school. So then we started the after-school program. We unfortunately didn't get the 21st Century Grant. If we would have got that, we would have been in Glendale Elementary as well. Because a lot of our kids attend Glendale, and if we could have swung it, we would have been in Woodlawn Elementary too.
Are all of those schools part of Princeton District?
Yeah.
And Woodlawn is part of 45215, and the mission of Lincoln Heights Outreach is all of 45215. But the kids there, great kids, but they just need support. You know what I mean? It's a fact that, you know, Lincoln Heights Elementary is the lowest performing elementary school in the district, but if you just look at it from the numbers, like, it's not going to tell the true story. And the principal will tell you this all the time. Like, look at the growth. And there is growth being realized. And then, you know, the school has always been the centerpiece of the community. Always. That's never going to change. So the community always tries to wrap itself around it. And for us, we're like, okay, what can we do to make sure that more kids are going to be successful, more kids realize growth. But I think one of the big things that, you know, I do got to be honest, we're still under-resourced. We haven't been as successful in grants. And I think one of the big things that we wanted to accomplish in terms of this story and in terms of some of the other things that is coming in terms of the conversations is that we have to be able to control the narrative of Lincoln Heights much, much better.
Yeah.
We have to be able to tell the story of resilience and not just the story of violence. And for that reason, we're sitting there and we have to do more in terms of trauma-informed care. Part of the reason being is because there's been a gun range in Lincoln Heights or in earshot of Lincoln Heights.
Outdoor
technically, it sits
range in
Evendale,
yeah.
Ohio.
Yeah.
But, you know, Cincinnati Police Department has had this gun range for the last 70 years. Like, and there aren't the mechanisms in terms of mental health services that should be there. For one, we know that the gun range shouldn't be needs to be moved, and the mayors from Lincoln Heights, Lachlan and Woodlawn, have, you know, they're making that push and that appeal to city council for it to be moved. But we got to think about what damage has been caused, right, and then what are we doing to actually service our kids. And not just write off kids from Lincoln Heights, oh, they have behavior issues, but how about we look at it through the lens of empathy? What have they been, you know, subjected to?
Yeah.
And then how do we move in the direction of healing to the community as a whole?
Because to that point, because as you kind of bring it all back full circle, when we first started, when we were kids, we talked about how there was a lot of violence and a lot of things in the community, especially when you took down the recreation center. But all growing up, all you heard was constant shots of bang, bang, bang coming from automatic weapons and automatic rifles that your Cincinnati police and other trainings are doing right there in Lincoln Heights. And you have been conditioned to that your whole life. There's been times that we wake up to gunshots knowing that it's not through the community, but it's Cincinnati police training. So think about if you had to grow up in that environment your whole life, and now you have kids still having to grow up in that environment their whole life. And then when they just go to a school with other kids who don't have to deal with that, but they have teachers stigmatizing them, saying other things about them. I just think about the mental aspect of that and what that really does to a community. So you talk about the GE aspect. You talk about the gun range being in there. There's a lot of things that might have killed any other community, but Lincoln Heights is still standing. We're still pushing, and we're actually going in the right direction. So the story of perseverance really needs to be the story about our community, not the story of violence.
Well, Durant, talk about the kids as well. What do you see from them that gives you hope that they get what's going on?
I love my kids, man, because I also coach football at Princeton High School as well. I'm one of our co-defensive coordinators. So a lot of the kids that come through Princeton are from Lincoln Heights kids. The number one player in the state, Darion Henry, is a Princeton kid. My favorite linebacker, John Harris, if you look at his story, he has a great story, but he's a Lincoln Heights kid. So my kids that I deal with, they are totally discredited. I get a bad rap because what might happen in the community from kids or situations that are for people that aren't from Lincoln Heights. There have been some violence that's gone on in the past couple months in our community, but if you see the people that have done them, they are not from our community, but they're hurting people in our community. So our kids are getting a bad rap. And when I tell you about my kids, they're some of the best testing kids that they have. They are some of the most hardworking kids, and that comes with the scholarship dollars that are coming through there. Mm-hmm. So I can go on all day talking about the kids that I have in Lincoln Heights and how proud I am of them and the things that they're doing, because when you talk about the resources that they have, they don't have them compared to the other communities, but yet they're still striving and at the same pace, or if not above, the other kids around them.
WCPO reporter Lucy May, you talked a little bit about how it was nice to get into a community as a journalist and to profile one, particularly like Lincoln Heights, that sometimes has a bad rap in the media, where we kind of swoop in when something horrible has happened. But what did you get? What was the sense that you got from just rank and file members of the community about what their feelings are about the village in which they live?
Everything I heard was very much hopeful and embracing what the Heights movement is doing. And even outside the community, when we met with Durant and Carlton and the other people with the Heights movement, the other gentlemen, they talked about Habitat for Humanity and how Habitat was coming in. And when I talked to somebody at Habitat for Humanity, they said, yeah, we're doing this Rock the Block event, and usually part of it is kind of cleaning up the community. She said, but Lincoln Heights is so clean. Like, you can drive through there, and there's not the litter that we find in other places where we're doing this. It's just obviously the community is so well-loved and cared for by the people who live there. And I think that speaks a lot. I mean, Habitat's everywhere, and that was the first thing she said unprompted about how grateful they were to be working in Lincoln Heights and being embraced by the community.
I'm sorry, just on that boat, on the Rock the Block, and they said that we had one of the best turnouts that they've ever had at the Rock the Block event last week. So they came out and wrote a letter to our council members, and they said it was one of the most successful ones. So, and I think like the promotion that you gave us, but yeah.
Carlton, what's next for the Heights movement? What's the next plan that you guys plan to execute?
Well, I would say, the very next thing is on November 2nd, we're doing a college application day. We're going to hold it right in Lincoln Heights Elementary, but we wanted to kind of bring more of those services that exist in terms of looking at post-secondary opportunities into the village of Lincoln Heights. As far as I can remember, and I don't remember there being a college application day in Lincoln Heights ever. Just being able to be there, being supportive. Like, I worked for CUIC for 4 years, so I know everything there is in terms of college admission. So, like, I know what's necessary. So to be able to pull this partnership off with DVS Education Solutions, they're coming in and helping kids with the ACT and helping parents with the FAFSA and just kind of, moving things forward.
Well, before I let you all go, on that note, since you all got the opportunity to leave and go to school, I believe Elon and Morehouse, is that what I heard you say at the beginning? What did that experience do for you in the way that you feel about the community that you've returned to? You got to go away. You got to experience college and that exciting part of one's life somewhere else and then come back. How did that make you feel now as an adult, as you look at your community after having been somewhere else?
Grateful. Because I got to see so many people and even know so many people who've done amazing things who come from Lincoln Heights. And I was fortunate enough to have a lot of those people pour into me, right? My grandfather was a pastor. He was pastor of Revelation Baptist Church, and he was an interim pastor for Lincoln Heights Missionary Baptist Church as well. And so I kind of had to, I always was walking on eggshells, couldn't get in trouble. There was somebody who was going to point it out. But more importantly, there was those people, because I started preschool. I didn't technically start in Princeton. I started at Lincoln Heights Christian Academy, which is right there in the basement of the church. So I've always been around Lincoln Heights. So I've always had those people, those shining and sterling examples, the Dr. Charles Folds of the world, being able to pour into me and say, hey, you can't do this way. Don't forget about your community. Everybody was excited. Going to Morehouse, great. But make sure you come back and make sure that you pour in. And I think about my godmother, and I hear Carol Jean's voice every time I think about doing something else. She would haunt me if I wasn't pouring into the community in Lincoln Heights. She really would.
And for me, and because me and Carlton had different college experiences. Carlton was obviously Morehouse is HBCU. Elon is not. So at Elon, there's 2% population that's African American. And if you take the population of those African Americans that didn't play sports, it gets really, really small. So we became forced us to now become our own knit community within that process there. So that was interesting because that was the first time I felt not uncomfortable may not be the first word, but I felt like it was a change of culture. It was a big culture shock walking in there, especially in North Carolina. So it gave me the foundation, it gave me the structure to build a community out of people that may not be my own family or people that I did not grow up with. And how can we, not a sense of survival, but a sense of belongingness, get through these 4 years together? And that was the biggest thing about Elon is that it showed me that it's not a black or white thing, but it is a community thing. And that within our community of Elon, how can we keep ourselves safe, keep ourselves on the right path when it may not seem that everything is, you know, aligned for us.
Our thanks to Lincoln Heights Village Council member and the Heights Movement co-founder Durance Daniels, the Heights Movement member Carlton Collins, and WCPO reporter Lucy May for bringing the story to our attention and for joining us as well. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
I just want to give one thing to Court Timmer, who was the founder with this, and just anybody else that's out there listening. If you can't think you can do anything, this Heights Movement was just an idea that sat down between two guys that were sitting on a couch 2 years ago, and it's expressed into this. So I just want to tell anybody out there, you can't get it done. Just do it.
All right. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
All right. Up next, we'll talk about last night's Democratic primary debate in Ohio. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.